Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here today. It is June 2nd, Tuesday, 9 a.m. The Nassau County Board of Supervisors. If everybody would please stand for the pledge and then remain standing, and we will have our invocation by Marvin Jacobo.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please pray with me. Master, thank you for these men here that are leading us, discerning, deciding, trying to figure out how to share resources, split the resources, give them wisdom. And Master, too, I think of the men and women in the audience today, those who work for the county, those who are part of the public. Thank you, Lord, that you've given us a privilege to be in this county, to be in a great country. Master, today, I'm sure there'll be difficult conversations. And may we begin to be the place that sets the model for the rest of the country about how to have difficult conversations and difficult discussions. That our conversations and our words would be seasoned with salt, would be gentle, firm, but yet respectful and civil. Would you do that for our county? For the least of these in our county who are not in this room this morning, and who need those of us in leadership to model for them what it means to live in a democratic country. Again, thank you for the time that you give us this morning. Give these men wisdom. Amen.
Marvin, thank you. And I always say this, but thank you for all you do. And Marvin's always our pitch hitter, too. Whenever we have someone not show up for the invocation, Marvin is always there. So thank you for doing that. Okay. We're going to start off today with a presentation regarding Disability Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. Marcy. I'm sorry, you're up. Yes.
Marvin was whispering in her ear.
Okay.
Hi. It's been 5 years since we started this venture with us, and Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors were the first to step up and declare June as Disability Awareness Month. And I just want to know, because of you guys, State of California has followed suit, and we just got notification that they have declared June as Disability Awareness Month throughout all of California. So thank you from the bottom of our heart.
Thank you, Marcy. You want to come up here, and we're going to... Yes, okay. I think it's on. Very good. Okay. Thank you for doing this today, and on behalf of the Board of Supervisors. Just a resolution that's proclaiming June 2015 as Disability Awareness Month, and thank you for everything you do. Thanks. Okay. Next up is our accommodation for Jeff Rowe, Director of Alliance WorkNet, upon his retirement.
Well, thank you, Chair. It's a real pleasure to acknowledge and recognize Jeff Rowe for over 23 years of dedicated service to Stanislaus County and recognize him upon his retirement from county service. He's joined today by his wife, Lisa, and daughter, Laura, and we want to thank you for all the support you provided Jeff over the years as he's taken on increasingly challenging responsibilities in the county, and I know that always takes a toll on the family. So thank you for being here today. Jeff began his career in Stanislaus County in 1991 when he was hired in the Community Services Agency as an eligibility specialist. I think he was hired the same time as Mr. Boggs, who's in my office. During his tenure here at the county, he has positively impacted many individuals in our community. His experiences range from career counselor, job developer, contracting manager, planning manager, and assistant director. And then in 2007, he was appointed as the director of Alliance WorkNet. He holds a bachelor's degree in political science and a master's degree in public administration from Cal State University, Stanislaus. One of the areas that always stood out is Jeff's tireless efforts to cultivate relationships with business professionals and notable community members seeking assistance. Early on in Jeff's career and through the course of time, the client feedback often included personal notes from consumers sharing words of appreciation for his willingness to go the extra mile and his commitment to customer service. He's had several highlights in his career, including significant program improvements and procuring competitive grants to address the employment needs of our local economy and businesses. He's leveraged resources through partnerships with MJC, the California Association of Health Facilities, and Emmanuel Hospital to continue expansion of LVN training programs. He's also been instrumental in welfare to work programs, Workforce Investment Act programs, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for adults, dislocated workers, and youth, and numerous others that show his determination to expand employment opportunities for the citizens of Stanislaus County. One of the programs I will always think about and is just remarkable was the 2013 Stand Together campaign, where they had a goal of achieving 1,000 new jobs. And when it was over, they were pleased to report that they had not excelled above that goal, and that actually had created 1,300 new jobs as part of that campaign. And the following year, they followed it up with further innovative programs that brought another 700 Stanislaus County residents to employment. Jeff has consistently and continually strived towards aligning today's business with tomorrow's focus. He's an innovator, a leader, a good communicator, and a consummate professional. So, Jeff, we want to thank you for your over 23 years of service to Stanislaus County and wish you all the best as you embark on your next chapter. So, thank you, Jeff Rowe, for your service.
Jeff, you come on up here for a second. Okay, Jeff, this is 23 years, and I'm sure it seems like it went by with a blink of an eye there. But I just want to read what's on here real quick. This is the infamous clock you get when you leave. But it says, Jeff Rowe, Director of Alliance Network, in grateful appreciation of your leadership and your service to the citizens of Stanislaus County, 1991 through 2015. And that's really what it's all about, you know. You know, people look at government all the time, and I think that they think that it's just, you know, just at the government trough. And but what's really going on here is leaders like you that are out there serving the public, doing the job, and taking care of people that just wouldn't happen if people like you didn't come along. So, you know, I know your job has to be fulfilling with the things you've done over the years and the people whose lives you've changed. I know when we had the little meeting or the little going away party last week, there was actually somebody there who I think you had helped and now works for the county. And so, anyway, you've done great stuff. It's great that your family is here. You have your wife and daughter. And I'm going to let you talk a little bit here.
Thank you, Supervisor Withrow. It really has been a rewarding 23 years of helping the residents of Stanislaus County in their quest for employment, both those who have lost a job recently and those who have maybe never really held a job. And I couldn't have asked for a more rewarding career, helping thousands of people move on with their lives and improve their lives. And I definitely couldn't have done it without the support of the Board of Supervisors, the support of the CEO's office, Stan and Keith. I want to specifically call out for all of your support and mentorship over the years. And my staff really made my job very easy. I have a very professional and hardworking staff. But most of all, I want to say thanks to my wife, who is my wife Lisa, who has always been by my side throughout everything over the years, and my daughter Laura, who I'm very proud of. She just graduated from Cal State Stanislaus with a degree in biology and chemistry. So she's obviously got her brains from her mom, not me. But thank you, guys. And thanks, staff. And it's been a lot of fun. This is actually my first day of retirement. I'm going to go home and take my change out of my tie and suit and kind of see what happens after that. Thank you very much.
We didn't get into this, but Peter was just saying that I knew that Jeff was a good basketball player, but was part of a championship team at Stanislaus State.
Yes. Yeah. Team member.
Very good. Haven't probably had one since then, since Jeff left the team. Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Now we're going to move on. Ruben has a presentation regarding the launch of the PreventionFocus.net.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Withrow, Board of Supervisors, Council Doring, and CEO Risen. I'm Ruben Imperial. I'm the Community Development and Empowerment Manager with the Chief Executive Office here in Stanislaus County, and I'm here to present on the new Focus on Prevention website. As approved by the Board of Supervisors, the Focus on Prevention is a county-wide initiative that aims to improve the quality of life for Stanislaus County residents and families. It was a multi-sector effort that has started within the last month. And this website is a tool that we'll be using to communicate to the public the progress of that initiative. There's a few things that I'd like to say before I start going through the actual website. The website will be used to inform the public on the progress of the initiative. There is also a centralized location to access data and reports utilized in the planning process and the meetings as well. And it is will also provide information on how the community can participate in a variety of the planning meetings, the community conversations, and what we imagine will be multiple ways that community members can get involved in the initiative. I'm going to go through the website. The actual website is focusonprevention.net, and as you can see here, it has an introduction to the actual initiative. It gives some brief overview of what's happening, and it also lets the community know on the four areas that we're working on. It also has a leadership section that describes the Stewardship Council, including a roster as well as the Action Council. And this page describes the functions of the Stewardship Council as well as how the Action Council interacts with the Stewardship Council and their planning functions. Also has a What's Coming page. It goes to whatever the next event is scheduled. The initiatives, it has the initiatives highlighted with a timeline as well that lets the public know when the actual planning meetings and sessions will start. In the event, for instance, with homelessness, the one that has started, it describes what's going on, it describes a little bit about some data, and then it also highlights the next Action Council meeting, which is scheduled for Tuesday, June 30th, and gives the address and who you can contact if you want to participate in the meetings as well. It has an outcomes page that describes ultimately the focus of the initiative is an outcomes-focused process. This describes as the initiatives move forward with planning that this is where the outcomes, and we imagine a dashboard of data indicators will be located for the public to see. And it has two tabs under resources where we have general resources for instance right now that highlights the current homelessness efforts, and it has some three access points for people if they're experiencing homeless or becoming homeless or they need public housing. So that is a resource for them. And also there's a resource page in terms of data and reports that has a variety of reports and data that we've used through the planning process or in the course of outreaching and talking to the public about things. Sometimes we quote statistics, and this is where we'll be pointing people towards in terms of they want to know more information about some of the things that are said at the meetings. As with the broader Focus on Prevention initiative, the county is providing the startup support to get it going. The Stewardship Council, though, will ultimately start to direct the development of the website and how we move forward with it. Now that the website is developed, we're working on some social media plans on how to start to promote the website. One of the ideas is to work with the variety of our community partners through the initiative to, what they say, strategically share it over a few days through all their social media accounts as we move forward. So I'd like to thank a few people, that one person that in particular that's here, Scott Cook. He's with the County Strategic Business Technology Department. He's right behind me, Scott. He's actually designed the website and did an excellent job. It's a beautifully designed website, a lot of neat features that he brought to it. I also want to thank Marion Kanan and Amanda Hughes with the Stanislaus County, with Stanislaus Community Foundation, who helped with reviewing some of the initial content. And I want to thank Judy Sly. She's the former opinion editor for the Modesto Bee, who helped with some of the editing as well in terms of how to communicate some of these concepts to the public. As with the initiative, the development of this website was a real partnership effort, where this is one of many tools that we imagine we'll be developing to communicate to the public the progress of the initiative and how to participate as well. So that concludes my presentation.
Very good. Thanks, Ruben. Stan, you wanted to?
Yeah, I just want to thank Ruben and Scott for their works in developing this website. Ruben, just one clarification. You mentioned focusonprevention.net. Is that the URL, or is it preventionfocus.net? I believe it's preventionfocus.net. Yeah, Scott's confirming that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to add that clarification.
And Ruben, I want to thank you for this. And while we're talking about focus on prevention, just real quick, we've had some press lately with regard to focus on prevention, and it seems like people are trying to find things that are wrong with it, reasons that something's wrong with what we're doing. And it just amazes me, because what's wrong is how many kids slept in their car last night. You know, how many kids, you know, went home from school and had to deal with unbelievable conditions in their house, and then are coming back the next day without a meal. You know, those are the things that are wrong, and that's what Focus on Prevention is all about. That's what we're trying to make a difference with this group, with the Stewardship Council. So as people try to poke their fingers at this thing and try to find everything they can that's wrong, what's wrong is what we're dealing with our children and trying to teach them and get them to work their way through school and go on to be successful. And that's what's wrong, and that's what Focus on Prevention is all about, is trying to fix that wrong. So we'll continue, I'm sure, to get articles and get discussions about everything that we're doing wrong. The meeting's private. What are you doing with that? There's people who are religious that are involved in it. We'll continue to get poked at, but we will continue to stay the course on this thing, and we're going to work on helping those children in our community to make this a better place. So anyway, I just want to make that statement. Thanks for putting this together, Ruben. Okay, now we are going to move on to public comment. And I have one card here from Hebe Garcia Boyo. How are you this morning?
I am very grateful to you. Last time I was here was September 17, 2013. Out of your compassion and caring, you provided an adult caseworker. He came to visit me at my house, 505 Kimball Street, Modesto, California, 95354. And he also was kind to refer me to the executive director of the Senior Citizens Project, I believe. I explained my case, and she, because it's a complex case, she said, "I cannot help you. I understand." There is currently a lawsuit against the Hibernian Properties LLC, Brian P. Lanz, my former spouse, well, he's not included, but, and Cimarron Trustee Services. My house is for sale, I understood from my attorney. There's a rush from Hibernian Property, he's a purported owner of my property, by an unlawful detainer, talking about needing to stop homelessness. The relationship between Hibernian with me is that a judgment is extend from under the color of law on the matters of an unlawful detainer, 2003697 Superior Court of California, County of Stanislaus. And the UCC, section 2302 of the UCC gives courts the power to modify the general rule that parties may make whatever contracts they please, so long as there is no fraud or illegality, in order to prevent oppression or unfair surprise by contracts or terms they find to be unconscionable. Contracts with apparently unconscionable terms are unenforceable. What happened with the unlawful detainer appeal is that my evidence, the only evidence that I had, my grand deed dated May 5th, 2012, was admitted by the judge, two judges, Buchesne and Salter. So I'm here to request help because the Fraudulent Act, I have this petition application for change assessment. I am questioning the manipulated fair market value of my property, as I'm going to read. This is an email from September 10, 2013 from Brian P. Lance, Ebe. The foreclosure sale of the Kimball Street home is set for the 18th of this month, at which time the home will either be sold to a third party or signed over to me. The judgment and fees incurred that were granted by the court are just shy of $98,000, and it is fairly unlikely that anyone will bid more than that. By the way, I was there at the day of the auction. I wanted to stop it. I handed documents, 20 pages, and they bought the house. I am therefore emailing you to make an offer to settle this matter. The offer is, if you sign the house over to me, I'm willing to let you stay in the home for up to 60 days. We will give you $5,000 to help you find another place, and we'll also consider the judgment paid in full. The funds will be paid in two increments, $3,000 upon signing over title, and the remaining $2,000. When you move from the home at the end of 60 days and turn over the keys, remotes, I refuse to turn over the keys and the remotes. And the way the sheriff's people came and said, I said, I'm not opening the door. I have trespassing signs. I have private property. No, we're going to knock the door down. Was I going to feel that? No, it's been a dehumanizing experience. I think this is a risk, he follows. He says, I think this is a reasonable offer and ask you to consider it and let me know if you will agree. I would require the signing of an agreement on these terms and the signing of the title transfer documents prior to September 18th, as I will not agree to delay the foreclosure sale of the home. Please let me know if you will agree. My application is signed under perjury, and what I'm asking you is for help. I am behind 1 month's rent. I am behind storage. I've been forced to have a dehumanizing experience, and I request of you, by the mercy of God, to expedite that this is a purported owner. I am attaching an original of a stamp by the Secretary of State that I am the owner. It's the exact, what is exactly in the escrow of my papers is here. What is exactly in the assessor's file is here. And this is the letter that says, owner's letter of authorization to Stanislaus County Assessors to review my file. In the name of God and mercy, I help me.
Thank you. Thank you, Hebe. And I think, I just a quick question for you. We probably, last time you were here, we asked, or we pointed you to the direction probably for some free, I mean, this is a personal matter, and we pointed you to the direction for some free legal help. Have you ever?
Yes, I think I said I'm grateful because of your compassion. I went to the executive director. My case is quite complex because it originated in Sonoma. And I was asked to sign a settlement agreement without informed consent. Who in their right mind, having accumulated savings, two properties, would have signed a settlement that would end up leaving me homeless? That settlement is in the fund, in the appraisals file. It's in the recordation of records.
So you did go for some.
Yes, and I'm very grateful for your compassion on that.
Okay.
I need help with rent and food stamps. This month I have not worked because someone listed my property with a different location but with a picture of my house. This is a clandestine transaction of real property.
Okay, if you can leave your name and number too, and we can help as far as possibly with the rent and food stamp through CSA, through our community service agency.
Human services refused, and there's an explanation. They refused to give me.
Okay, well,
but what happened is that I'm above the threshold of the amount, but then the threshold leaves me with zero.
Okay, well, if you can leave us your name and number, and let's continue to see if there's something we can do.
Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that is the only card that I have. Is there anyone else that would like? Okay. Catherine Borges. Catherine, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Okay. So,
that's
good morning,
for,
gentlemen.
That's not for the sheriff, is it?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking.
it's a prop for my suite.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to say, nice job on adding the invocation. I really like it, and I hope you keep it. Okay, so good morning. 3 years ago, I was living a peaceful suburban life in Salida, doing things like playing bunco and quilting. This is the quilt top that I was working on 3 years ago when my quiet life was upended by Mayor Marsh saying he wanted to annex Salida. 3 years ago, I had no idea what kind of political machine we were up against, and that Modesto machine is still cranking against Salida. In November, the council voted to remove all of Salida from their city manager being able to approve any municipal water connections. And just last week, someone quoted Dave Lopez as recently saying, Salida is doomed. Now, you and I both know Salida is not doomed. If they apply to annex us, we will vote it down. But I didn't know this 3 years ago when it all started. I had no idea what LAFCO was, or that Salida's fate rests so heavily upon the LAFCO board's decisions. Over the past 3 years, I've tried to learn as much as possible about LAFCO. Keith Boggs wrote a great article about LAFCO in this edition of Stanislaus Magazine, which I pick up at the blood bank while donating blood. Kudos, Mr. Boggs. I recommend this to anyone who needs a good primer on LAFCO. However, there's much more to know, and that includes studying how the LAFCO board votes. So if those of you were thinking that myself and the other Salida and Wood Colony people folks who attend LAFCO meetings have nothing better to do on a Wednesday night than attend a LAFCO meeting, you'd be sadly mistaken. No offense to those of you who serve on LAFCO, but there's a whole host of other things I'd rather be doing on a Wednesday night, like going to happy hour with my friends or finishing this quilt top. But no, we go to study you and watch how you vote. I've been attending LAFCO meetings now for quite some time and have witnessed firsthand this appalling sideshow that has transpired over Mayor Beekman's vote on Amendment 22 regarding farmland mitigation. What's so appalling is how low of a mitigation amount that some cities are trying to get away with, as if our prime farmland, which to quote Supervisor DeMartini, it grows 200 different kinds of crops, is worth so little to mitigate. And equally appalling is the modern witch trial they are now using to punish Mayor Beekman for his vote. Now, there's an inequity about this that I wish to bring up here. Apparently, the way the rules are written, the mayors can vote to remove a mayor as their representative, but the public cannot vote to remove the public member of LAFCO, but the Board of Supervisors can. Now, I don't know Matthew Beekman. I've never met him, and I know very little about him other than that he's a beekeeper and a mayor of Houston. I have met Brad Hahn and have briefly chatted with him twice, and he seems a nice enough person. And while I don't know nor can predict how they would vote on Salida when or if it comes to LAFCO, I can tell you this. As a member of the public, Brad Hahn's vote did not represent me on Amendment 22. Based on the outcry in favor of Mayor Beekman, I'd say there's quite a large segment of the county that feels the same way. And depending on how the mayor's vote comes out on July 8th, this may be an inequity that the public asks you to rectify. After all, you do represent the public. I look forward to the day that Salida is no longer threatened by whomever is trying to exploit us next, and I can go back to my formerly quiet life where my biggest worry was correctly stitching together quilting squares. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Okay, any other people that would like to speak during public comment? If not, we will move on. Okay, to consent calendar, and I would like to pull item B4 because I need to conflict out of that, and I'm going to let Dick take over as I leave the room on that part. But anybody, other items need to pull from the consent calendar? Okay. So if we could have a motion to approve all other items with the exception of B4, that would be great.
So moved.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Passes 5-0. And then item B4, Dick is going to take over here.
Excuse me. Remaining on the consent calendar is B4. May I have a motion on that?
Motion to approve B4.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Passed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Supervisor Monteith, for doing that. I think we will jump to the 9:05, since it is past 9:05. Mary Ann Lee.
Good morning. I'm Mary Ann Lee, the Director of the Health Services Agency. And with me this morning is Maria Blanco from our administrative office and Carol Dunbar, our chief financial officer. So between the three of us, hopefully we'll be able to answer any questions that you would have. We're here to talk about the MIA, the Medically Indigent Adult Program, and we do still have an MIA program. I thought I would just start with a little bit of context, though. There are many fewer that are really relying on the county indigent program today. Pre-recession, we were running at enrollment during a fiscal year of about 6,000 unique individuals. At the height of the recession, that had climbed to about 9,000. And give kudos to really a lot of the CSA hard work and working with HSA. So many of those individuals transferred to Medi-Cal with the expansion of Medi-Cal January 1st of 2014. Since that date, since January 1 of 2014, we've had 13 individuals rely on the MIA program for access to health care, and really, as we'd expected, really only for a temporary period of time until their other coverage became effective. Which is really a good thing, both because we want individuals to have access to health care, but also because the state essentially took all the money from the county that was there to fund that indigent program. With leaving the obligation on counties to have a program, so we still do have that obligation to have an MIA program. This probably looks familiar to you. We essentially have two levels of eligibility for the MIA program. One is a subsistence basic needs level where there's no patient cost sharing. At this point, there really aren't individuals relying upon that. What we're talking about today is the higher level, the hardship eligibility income limit, where patients do have a share of the cost. Why are we here? We're here because of changing market conditions, and we're here because of that to be consistent with your policy on the methodology for how we set the income limits, which is really based on the amount of money that one would need in order to purchase healthcare premiums. And since the premiums have changed in the market, what's available, to be consistent with methodology, we're proposing an adjustment. And again, it's really a financially responsible thing to do. This slide is to show you really what we're talking about, what the adjustment that we're proposing is based upon. The existing income limits are based upon a program run by the state that's referred to as Mr. MIP. It has higher premiums than the covered California exchange premiums, and it doesn't meet the minimum essential benefits for the individual mandate under health reform. But we had proposed that last year because we really looked at 2014 as a transition year, maybe out of abundance of caution, and to give the population time to adjust and learn and know what was available. But we're past that transition year now in 2015. The Covered California program meets the minimum essential benefits that are required under that individual mandate. So basically what we've done to the income limit to apply an adjustment is to apply the covered California premiums instead of the Mr. Mitt premiums, to apply the covered California deductible amount. And then because it's a lower number, the tax liability is adjusted too, recognizing that lower income level needed to purchase a premium. So when we do that, this is what it comes out looking like. If you're in the marketplace, it's common that healthcare premiums are age banded. So the age, let's say you're in the age band of 21 to 29, currently the income limit is at 160% of the federal poverty level, and we're proposing that that go to 144. Under the state health and safety code, when we make a proposal like this, it's required that we try to share what's our estimate of what's the impact to individuals and what's the financial impact to the county if you move forward with the proposal. Given the very small numbers and a really short history, it is difficult to tell you what those figures are. We're estimating that if you adopt this proposal, that 0 to 10 individuals would be impacted by it, and that the savings could be nothing to maybe $250,000. It really depends on those individuals and what care would have been needed. We talked about this and gave the proposal to the Health Executive Committee of your board that supported these recommendations at their meeting of April 3rd. So at this time, we would ask that you conduct the public hearing that's required under the Health and Safety Code and approve the adjustments that we're proposing to the hardship limit. And with that, I'll stop and answer any questions.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Mary Ann. Any questions of Mary Ann before we open the public hearing? Seeing none, now we will open the public hearing. Any questions of the public for Mary Ann? We will close the public hearing and bring it back to the board. Any further comments?
Motion to approve staff recommendations.
We have a motion approved. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We will move back now to item B8. Madeline.
Good morning, Chairman Withrow.
Good morning, Madeline. How are you?
Board members, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doering, doing well. Thank you. Today I'm here to present our annual update for the Mental Health Services Act. I want to thank all of the stakeholders that have participated in this. We've had many stakeholders give us input. Want to also acknowledge Dan Rosas. He's over here doing PowerPoint, helping me out today, as well as Kirsten Jasek-Risbell, who's done a lot of work on outcomes for this. In addition, I'd like to thank my staff, who've worked hard and diligently to try to get this together, and all others who've kind of helped us with this and reviewed everything. So let me just start with, there you go. Ready. Okay. Just some basic facts about, mental illness, the prevalence of it, that it's a leading cause of disability, that, that a fair number of our residents do have a need for mental health services because they either have a severe mental illness or a severe emotional disturbance, which is usually what you refer to with children who have disabilities. 1 in 6 suffer from anxiety and depression, so this is not an uncommon thing. So what's been done to help? Proposition 63, the Mental Health Service Act, which was passed in 2004, that provides funds to expand services, mental health services. There are 5 components to it. The community service and supports, which is the largest chunk of money. Secondly is the prevention early intervention. So community services and supports is 80%. Prevention early intervention is 20%. Now, out of those two pots, there is money potentially for workforce education and training, capital facilities, technological needs, And of that 100%, 5% is taken out for innovation projects. This annual update is required. So the data is from 2013-14, because you need a full fiscal year to look at the data. And then there are pieces of it that highlight coming up for next fiscal year, 15-16. This report that was sent to all of you is filled with facts and outcomes, and it hopefully you had a chance to look at that. The annual updates must be adopted by the Board of Supervisors, and then once it's adopted, we have to send it to the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission. So let me start with what is important here, which are outcomes, and talk a little bit very quickly about results-based accountability. It's a way to evaluate efforts and progress, and I think what's very important to me, this comes from an individual, Mark Friedman, who's written a book called Trying Hard is Not Good Enough. So it's not only that you're making efforts, your efforts have to have outcomes that produce community wellness factors or individual wellness factors. It helps, it's a very common sense way of looking at it. It helps everybody understand it's not a complicated scientific methodology. You start with the end, where you want to be, and work back to how you get to that. So it is something that works well with individuals as well as communities, and we have seen that in our, especially in our prevention and early intervention efforts. It's data-driven. If things are not turning out the way that you want them to turn out, then you need to go and try to figure out how to change what you're doing to make the outcomes happen. Next. So with RBA efforts, we started this with the MHSA-funded PEI programs, and I want to thank Ruben Imperial for his efforts to begin this whole process, and one CSS program. This year, we expanded RBA to other programs, and it is our intent that ultimately all the Mental Health Service Act programs, including those that are not Mental Health Service Act programs, county-operated and contracted, will participate in some form of RBA. So let's start with the first component, which is the community services and supports component. This is the first one that went into place. We were the first county to have submitted our plan and had it approved in 2005, and we began in 2006 with our first full service partnerships. These are very intensive services, they're high end, they do produce good outcomes, which we'll see in a moment, but they are small programs, so ultimately how many people get served in them is relatively few, but it is also one of the most effective ways of dealing with the most those most in need of help. We have been required for a long time since the beginning to report outcomes on these programs, and that to the state. Now, the state has done very little with that, and a lot of the controversy that we've heard about having no outcomes and whatnot with MHSA has to do with no one's really looked at it. And I keep pointing to those who have those concerns to look at our update. There's a lot in there. So this particular slide has to do with our homeless outreach programs and our TRAC and Josie's TRAC program, which is our TAIA programs. Just so you can see how the difference has been over time. Now, one thing I do want to...
Madam?
Yes.
That's amazing. If that's what that shows there, isn't it? I mean, to look at that and...
Well, they are very effective programs, and unfortunately, for example, you see at the bottom, 191 individuals participated in this 2013-14 year. So, you know, we are definitely saying that this is very necessary for a number of individuals that are seriously mentally ill. There are a couple things I just want to point out. We're going to be looking at it slightly differently next year. Because you're looking at the difference between the days, say, homeless before they entered our program and the days after they enter, how often they were homeless. That is a year's comparison to a year's comparison. Now, you will have individuals of that 191 who have not been in the program for a year. So we annualize, which means that there's some estimate piece to this. So I think next year we really want to, I mean, the estimates are very close. There's nothing really off about it. It's just that it is somewhat of an estimate with those individuals who have not been in the program for a year. Next year, we really want to look at the difference between those that actually have been in a year, which will make the sample smaller, but we can see whether or not the way in which we've been calculating this is actually effective. It could raise the outcomes, meaning those that have been in longer do better, and those that haven't have more of the incidence of homelessness that we would see, but we need to check that out. So going forward, we will be looking at this a little bit differently next year. Let me just focus now on the next slide. And I really just kind of briefly want to show you the bar graphs, and then these are the important slides, I think, when you look at cost avoidance. Obviously, we're not saving money because someone didn't go into jail. We know our jail has been very heavily impacted. But for the lives of those who don't have to go into jail because they've gotten help for their mental illness, that would be the actual cost savings. The number of hospital days is actually true because we actually know that we saved money that we didn't have to put out for hospitalization for these individuals. Next. So this is juvenile justice. A little bit less change, although they go from having been in the hospital more at to none. But again, this is a program that's really working with a very high-end group of juvenile justice of youth. So the savings here, again, about 36.5 in the amount of cost of incarceration for juveniles.
And why, Madeline, do you think it not as good a results with the juvenile
side? I guess that part of it has to do with the population, a little bit more difficult perhaps to engage. It's certainly a question that I want to look into more as to why the difference there. This full service partnership actually really is promoting lowering aggression to promoting more pro-social behavior, which is something you may not see the outcome of fairly quickly. But this is the juvenile justice clients have just done marvelous things in the way of leadership. So those that have benefited have gone on to get jobs, to be leaders, and that sort of thing, which is very impressive. The integrated forensics team, similar. In the outcomes there, of course, they are primarily focused on of individuals who've been involved with the legal system. So the incarceration is higher than it might have been with others, but homelessness is right up there too. And then, of course, the outcomes for that. Next. This is the health high risk, older adults, and those with chronic health conditions that we wanted to reach out to try to behaviorally change how they manage their health problems in addition to their mental health issues. Next. And again, the savings for this population. So all together, this is the combined results for all of the programs, and the next shows the accumulated cost savings. So before I go on to the next section, I just want to say that before, you know, we've always had a way of having the stakeholders prioritize the efforts that we make. And this is especially true with prevention, early intervention, and innovation. So we did I met with each one of you to talk about where your priorities might be. And although we're really looking at applying those to future, they actually fit in very well with the proposals that you will see today. Those priorities were reduction in suicide rates, reduction in homelessness, especially in the outlying areas, reduction in incarceration, reduction in stigma. I mean, I'm wearing my Each Mind Matters, Stigma Stops With Me, reduction in ER visits, and overall prevention in general. So we do have the proposals today in many ways meet those priorities. So here we are with prevention, early intervention. Can you go back a slide? Yes. So this is the getting away from you have to fail to get help, which has been the truth for a number of years. This is trying to get there early enough before you really need the kind of help that individual who qualifies for our services would meet. Obviously, it can have immediate long-term, and it develops protective factors. We're focused on risk, and we're focused on protective factors. So those are the things we want to develop because those are the things that help people succeed in going forward. This year, Mr. Imperial did make a great effort to try to restructure our PEI plan, a number of reasons. The Mental Health Oversight and Accountability Commission decided to kind of review the regulations and make changes in them in some ways that I have not been really pleased with, having to do with the fact that universal prevention or your primary prevention, which is what you do for the entire population, is being de-emphasized. But nevertheless, we decided that we would move ahead with trying to make sure we have sort of a laser focus on risk and the outcomes associated with our prevention efforts. Trying to get ahead of the curve, which I think is something that we all have to look at. So what happened, and there are places in the plan where it talks about how we actually went ahead with the restructuring from our previous structure to this structure. So these are the focus that we would have. The statewide initiatives, because of the fact that there is so much that can be gained statewide, this whole each mind matters, know the signs. No one county could have had the ability to do the kinds of things that have come about on a statewide basis. Prevention programs overall, early intervention programs, outreach for increasing recognition of early signs of mental illness. If you can get there early enough, you can have an amazing effect. I mean, recently, there was the death of a man who was in physics, I think it was, and he had schizophrenia, was living with schizophrenia, and yet able to get Nobel Prize in that, because I think there was an effort to intervene with his illness. Stigma discrimination reduction programs, and also our suicide prevention programs. So these are the essence of what we want to focus on with our prevention and early intervention. These are just some highlights. There's far more in the report. You can see that we reached a number of individuals with our suicide prevention and early psychosis through signs in theaters. So, you know, you have to sit through things before you actually get to the movie. And this was one of the things in many of the local theaters. A number of community residents were trained in mental health first aid, and many more in the schools as part of the statewide school mental health, student mental health initiative. Locally, that was focused on training people to recognize signs of suicide and try to intervene. This mental health first aid is kind of like CPR. I mean, you can learn how to do it and not be afraid to talk to someone who you think might be thinking of that. Many people thought, well, that'll just make them do it. That is not the case, that there are ways to intervene to get help early. The Nurtured Heart approach in the schools has really done great things with changing the culture of the school to focus more on the positive, not the negative, to include a united front of parents, students, and teachers, to change the way in which schools are managing issues. And then in our own voice, which our volunteer with NAMI, and the members of NAMI go out and talk about mental illness to decrease the stigma of it. Also seniors, the efforts that the PEARLS program has made, as measured by a patient health questionnaire 9, shows a significant decrease in depression. And this is a risk group, so having that ability to reduce that is helpful overall. So the proposed funding for PEI is only the statewide campaign projects. We have less money to offer this year than we did before, so this is the amount that we're able to offer. It is for all those three prevention efforts at the statewide level. There are no staffing impacts. Workforce education and training, which is another component, the third component of the Mental Health Service Act. Again, you're working on training your workforce, trying to identify the gaps out there. We did a really intensive study when we first started this effort, and that was where we kind of focused our efforts, starting in junior high schools, trying to get people interested in the mental health field in junior high and working our way up high schools and colleges. The values of Mental Health the Service Act are promoted in the training, and that has to do with community collaboration, cultural competence, culture or client and family driven services, wellness focus, which includes a focus on resiliency and recovery, and integrated services experience, so you're not kind of at odds. There's an integration to how your services are provided. There's often a comment about, well, what does lived experience mean? So we're looking for people with lived experience to work for us or anybody. And I think this was a way to kind of bring that up in a more formal context. So it's people who are actually living with mental illness or their family members. So they have a very valuable understanding and compassion that it builds for individuals who are dealing with the mental health challenges. Because mental illness, in even its very mild form, like being anxious about coming to talk to the board today about my plan, from that all the way to individuals who have a very serious mental illness or a very serious emotional disturbance, we don't ask that question, but I believe that a fair number of individuals have experienced with that. So the highlights, you see again, we have a number of partnerships. One significant one is with Modesto Junior College, and they have the CASRA program there, and we've had a number of students. We do provide stipends. It's a fairly lengthy thing. If you want to get certified, you obviously have to have almost a year's worth of full-time field experience to qualify for the test. And we have begun to hire CASRA volunteers into our county agencies and our partner agencies. At CSU Stanislaus, we have been giving stipends. We've also placed them in internships to get work, to get their clinical experience, and then many of them get hired. Also as part of this is the volunteer program, and as you can see, we've had about 14,600 hours of volunteer as part of this program. So our request is to add $150,000 for training specific to suicide prevention, both for the general population that I spoke about, as well as professionals. There is something called ASSIST training, which is really for professionals, and we're wanting to do more of that. Also, we want to continue to increase the skills of those who are in the full service partnerships, who are using assertive community treatment techniques. And because we really want to impact those so difficult individuals that we work with, we're also focusing on another evidence-based practice of high-intensity homeless outreach and engagement. Again, this is training. There are no staffing impacts. Technological needs. This includes our electronic health record system, the access to computing resources for consumers and family members, data warehousing, which is how we get our data for our outcomes. It's interesting to me that many counties don't have this, so they really don't have a way of checking their outcomes, which to me is just amazing. But that is how it is in some. We've been very ahead of the curve with this one and had that be part of the funding from MHSA. And performance outcomes is also part of our technological needs area. So we are proposing to enhance our ability to provide, evaluate, and monitor performance outcomes. You cannot be in any kind of forum and not hear that this is an important thing if we're going to be spending the public funds. So federal, state, and local and board has been for a number of years very clear that outcomes need to be there for the money that's being spent. So we are asking for $400,000, and the staffing impacts would be that this is one systems engineer, one software developer, and one staff services coordinator to augment our performance outcomes unit so that we are able to have the ability to monitor more of what we do. Because as I mentioned in the beginning, we want to make RBA a part of everything that we do. And that right now is very difficult with the resources that we have. Lastly is innovation. Again, innovation has specific rules to it. It's also a very interesting aspect that the Mental Health Service Act, not Mental Health Service Act, the Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission wants to also fool with. The innovation was designed to be something that was a learning that we could apply to our mental health services. And, you know, it didn't have to be only with severely mentally ill individuals. And I think that they're trying to move it that way, which in my mind is a mistake in that there are things you can learn from doing other things. I think our first innovation project was one in which we were going to try to figure out how to bring stakeholders into figuring out a severe budget problem that we had with our alcohol and drug programs. So we brought all these stakeholders together, and the actual ability for a group of people to come together to make a decision on where do we start? We had to cut $1 million from a very limited budget already. And the ideas that came out of that and the consensus that came out of that allowed us to continue our substance use services in a way that has actually been keeping them in the black. I think it ended up with unique ways of managing that service without some of the high cost end, and it's been very effective. So the intent had been then to move it to our full budget, but I think that what happened is we started to have the recession and whatnot, and it became more difficult to actually plan. But it was the power of the population, the power of the group making decisions. So again, it has to be on learning. It's not just about service delivery. So even though you may have service delivery, you have the focus is really on the learning, not the service. If you want to continue it, you have to find some other way to do that. And this is the ideas about what we've developed and shared with our stakeholders, that if you have good outcomes with an innovation program, then you're going to have to find another component that would fit the project, and we need to have sufficient funding to cover it. So it's not a given that just because something has good outcomes that it will be able to be sustained. But that is something that we have to calculate in and figure in. And if you do not have good outcomes, then of course that's not going to go anywhere. You can't just slightly change it a little bit to get another round of funding, and I think that's been something that's been an issue. So we have had 9 projects in. They're all described in the plan. The final learning reports from those get sent to the Oversight and Accountability Commission. There's still 2 remaining projects that are going to be completed in the next fiscal year. Our proposal for this annual update funding is a co-occurring full-service partnership. This will target individuals who have both mental health and substance use issues, which if you don't treat them at the same time that, you know, you can treat the mental illness and then the substance abuse will go up. You can treat the substance abuse, but it doesn't help with the mental health. So you've really got to do both, and you get amazing results. And we feel that a number of the individuals that are so hard to reach, that may be on the streets, that are wandering around, are those with co-occurring, and this would be a way to really focus on them. Another important piece of this is that it is really connected to primary care, so we also want them to start taking care of their bodies and reducing overall health care costs. So this is a project that will focus on high-intensity outreach and engagement strategies, and also will obviously be focused on reducing the homelessness, incarceration, hospitalization, both general acute and psychiatric settings. It is in alignment with a number of the board priorities that have been mentioned. It's also leading to better access, which is one of the innovation regulations, and also improving the quality of services. The staffing, this is an $800,000 MHSA input. The staffing impacts are 3 behavioral health specialists, 2 mental health clinicians, one of which would be a coordinator of the at full service partnership, and 1 administrative clerk, 3. So the recommendations brought to you today for approval is the adoption of this annual update for fiscal year 2015-2016, and the authorization for me to sign the annual update, authorizing the auditor controller or her designee to sign the annual update certifying that the fiscal requirements on the certification form have been met, authorizing the funding of the California Mental Health Services Authority, CalMESA, for the statewide prevention early intervention in the amount of $90,000, and amending the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the recommended changes outlined in the staffing impact section effective the first pay period after the Board of Supervisors approval. And with that, I'm absolutely happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Madeline. Questions of Madeline?
Yeah.
Supervisor Chiesa.
Thank you, Madeline. It was very complete. I just want you to know that this is good news, and it seems like the budget, as our budget's getting better, there's more money coming in. Yours, like $1.4 million, and it's what we do with that money to make it better. We've targeted the high risk we have in the past, keeping people out of the hospitals, keeping people out of jail, keeping people out of our acute psychiatric, and we've proven results. I saw that today, and now we're going further down the line. We're expanding services for the first time in a while. My question is, when we talk about the community impact, you have a representative stakeholder steering committee that you go to on this, looking at this. We also have the mental health board that's made up of consumers and other
family
folks
members,
alike.
Yes.
Do we have the same thing? What's the difference between the two committees, and do we look for input from both of those committees?
Yes. Actually, mental health board members actually can participate and are participants in the representative stakeholder process. The representative stakeholder process is really defined in law, but we've also added our own individuals to that. I didn't present a slide on that, but we have all sectors, CBOs, consumers, family members, all of our represented from many of our department, our county departments, and of course our we actually have our mental health board members that do come to that. We've really had a lot of success with getting more consumers and family members there, and as you might have noted in the report, there were comments that came to the mental health board, because the mental health board on an annual update holds a public hearing for final input. So we did have a couple of parents who spoke very passionately about the services that their children were not getting. And it was interesting because I do believe in both cases, some one of them kind of wasn't sure that what a full service partnership was, because she comes from another state where they call them PAC teams. So I kind of put that into the report. But it was helpful in that I think the full service partnership that we're setting up is actually going to be very beneficial to one or both of those individuals. Partly because one of them lives in a very outlying area of the county, has had difficulty getting help. So I hope that answers the question, that they're both involved. There's a formal piece for the mental health board to take on as a public hearing on an update. They don't have to have that on a plan update. So if we change more during the course of the year, as last year I came in September to ask for another plan update, funding, that does not have to have a public hearing.
And keep concentrating on the outcomes. That is very good to see how we're spending our money and how positive the outcomes are.
Well, we have let contractors know that we're monitoring them for that. That's going to be a piece of renewal.
Very good. Any other comments? And just one couple things. First, great job again on what you're doing. Doing good stuff there. Like Supervisor Chiesa said, the results-based accountability is great. It looks like, based on your numbers kind of there with these programs, has saved almost $4 million in additional hospitalization and incarceration. So the one question I had, though, and it sounds like, I just want to make sure I understand this, you know, of this increase of $1.4 million, and only 90,000 prevention early intervention, that's kind of state, we're limited to the 90,000 because of the state, is that right?
No, it was the one component, PEI, that we have the least amount of money. If we look at sustainability out for 3 years, that is what we had that we could commit to. Last year, we had some one-time funding that we were able to give them, I think about $237,000. They asked for a 4 to 7% of your allocation, and we just weren't able to. This is 3%.
Okay. And the Mental Health Service Act, like you said, it's only 20% of that can go towards prevention and early intervention. Is that
right? Because of that, they're in these categories. Now you have some flexibility with workforce education and training, technological needs, and prudent reserve. I guess. You know, this money reverts in 3 years if you don't use it. So there is the option to put it into prudent reserve, which I believe requires the board to consider taking it out of prudent reserve. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that. We've had something in there for a number of years. It went in as part of a PEI. We were afraid we couldn't use that amount of money, so we put it in prudent reserve. We're considering whether or not we want to take that out, because looking at the fact that sustainability down the line for the 3 years out that we're looking at, we may not be able to do as much with prevention as we would like to. So we are starting to ask the question about that. Maybe we ought to look at that.
Okay. Well, that would be great.
Yeah, there's about $500,000 in there.
Okay, because I know when we talked, that was, you know, when you met with us, and I know prevention and early intervention, not sure where everybody else was, but that was what...
I know, and I think that a lot of the energy of the stakeholders is behind prevention and intervention. So finding ways to augment that would be helpful. And I know that, you know, we were hoping for more growth money. Apparently, that is not going to happen for next year. So, you know, we're going to have to be careful. I mean, that's the trick with this, is the sustainability. You know, you've got to look down the line. I mean, we've already, we use capital facilities for the CSU. It'll start operation in November. Now, we've already planned how that's going to be covered going out the next 2 or 3 years. And that's the kind of planning you have, but it's very difficult.
Okay. Great. So maybe we'll hear back from you more as you look at the possibility.
Yes. We do believe we will have some money to do a plan update, which should hopefully come to you at the end of August.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions? Any questions from the public? Okay. I'll bring it back to the board. What's your pleasure?
A motion to approve staff recommendations 1 through 5.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank
Alan,
you
thank
all.
You very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the City of Modesto requesting Stanislaus County adopt a resolution of support for the ACE train expansion project.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office and Department of Public Works.
This board has received a letter from the City of Modesto requesting support of the San Joaquin River Valley Travel and Tourism Project to promote and stimulate economic growth for our region.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a notice of proposed rulemaking from California State Lands Commission regarding the implementation of administrative hearings concerning structures built on state-owned land without authorization.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development, Department of Public Works, and Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from the counties of Del Norte, Humboldt, Lake, Mendocino, Sonoma, and Trinity requesting support of the North Coast County's marijuana policy statement, which was developed to shape state legislation on cannabis policy and potential legalization with appropriate local control.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, County Council, and Health Service Agency.
This board has received the claim as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Board of Supervisor reports.
Maybe. We'll take a quick shot at last week with CSAC's Ledge Conference, and everyone, Stan can chime in on what he thought, but the discussion was a lot of discussion on transportation. It's going to be one of the soup du jours of this year's Ledge session. Water is always a main topic. It's always how to finance the projects. We also have a potential fix for negative bailout, although it's a potential fix. I'll keep reminding, the budget has to be in by June 15th, so it's going to be fast and furious going forward. It's in a trailer bill, which is probably opposed by the League. It is opposed by the League of Cities, and so we'll have to watch that closely. It's not only fixing ours, but there's a few other counties that have minor problems. And I'm trying to think what else. Again, good discussion. I always find those fascinating, talking with other counties. We just had the discussion on marijuana. There's the Medical Marijuana Working Group, which has Humboldt and Santa Cruz County, and Bruce McPherson is one of the chairs, former Secretary of State, trying to drive some a pretty good policy so that if something gets on the ballot, it's some language that we can work with that gives the authorities to the locals, and maybe not going above us or too far below us. So, again, you know, things that we don't think in the mainstream are very much the topic there, and I always enjoy it. So,
very good. Thank you. Any other reports? Legislative.
Well, I'd just like to chime in that Supervisor Kiz, as everyone knows, is president of the CSAC organization, so he hosted a number of the meetings, including the luncheon with the governor, and you just did an excellent job, and we appreciate having you up there. And you know, the governor has been very supportive of pushing things down as much as possible to the local level, and reaffirmed that message in his speech. So, yeah, it was a good conference up at CSAC. On negative bailout, I do need to let you know it is negative bailout's not attracting some opposition, but it's linked in a bill that deals with some redevelopment dissolution language, and that is attracting some opposition from some of the cities. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that it'll survive through to the final budget. Friday is the last day for bills to pass out of the House of Original Origin, so we'll be keeping our eyes to see what bills are still alive as of the end of this week. And then on the federal level, USDA announced that it's providing $21 million to help ranchers install new water conservation practices as part of the 2014 Farm Bill. So currently USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service is evaluating its approach on this end-of-the-year drought management funding opportunities, and it may be available in the near future. That concludes my report.
Very good. If there's nothing else, this meeting is adjourned.